want to first off say I really appreciate that singing that Danny just led. I've always loved that song, Send the Light. It's just such a beautiful message of how we should be treating the gospel as it truly is, the light unto the world. It's so good to see everybody here. It's good to see we have several visitors. We have a full row of Carries in the back, and we actually have gotten some of our own back. It's good to see both Lowell and Zane back with us after their travels. Maybe troubles, you know, depends on the trip. And it's good to see James Brown with us as well. So it's good to see such a full building. And I wanted to also pass on, Rachel just said thank you so much to all the ladies who came last night for the ornament and cookie exchange. I thank you for the cookies that you made that I have been sampling. They've been delicious. And I obviously was not there for the vast part of the evening. I had taken the kids and we were out. And then towards the end of it, I did come back to get my keys so that we could go to the office and just kind of wait out the last little bits of it. And I do want to warn the men, when I went in there, there was some odd, like, torches and pitchfork things. It was like down with the patriarchy. It's not his story, it's her story. So if there's any rebellion later on, my bad. Just my bad. No, it's always wonderful to have opportunities for Christians to gather together, to enjoy each other's company, and to just grow in our fellowship with one another. And I commend you all to make sure that we're taking time to do that. We got to talk this morning about long-suffering and the importance of understanding what that word means, of the combination of both patience and being slow to anger, but particularly being willing to endure the difficulties of this life, being willing to endure the hardships of relationships because our God has been long-suffering towards us. The second sermon today kind of goes a little bit along with that idea of patience and kind of gets into a different aspect of patience, and that is contentment. And these two ideas of patience and long-suffering and contentment are related because they're really going hand in hand with one another. Because as we are being long-suffering, as we are enduring our time here on earth, there's a call that God has for us to be content in our time here on earth, that He wants us to be able to find joy in our time. That's not always an easy thing to do, because there's a reason we're called to suffer long in this world. There's a lot of things in this world that go wrong. There are plans that we make that fall through, or hopes and dreams we have that never come to fruition. There are relationships that strain us on a daily basis. There is the world to deal with. It can be very easy to get frustrated and to get downtrodden about the world that we live in. And yet God has offered us encouragement that there is a wisdom to finding contentment in our time. And so what I want to talk about this morning is how we can be content. What I think the Bible prescribes as a practical method of how we can be content, no matter what the time frame is. And really, any time you talk about contentment, I think you have to start in Ecclesiastes. So if you want to turn over there to the third chapter of that book, Ecclesiastes chapter 3. I think Ecclesiastes may be my favorite book in the Old Testament, if I had to narrow it down. Because there's so much of the wisdom literature that is just filled with practical things, that is filled with good thoughts. But Ecclesiastes, to me, is kind of where the rubber hits the road. It takes the good lessons of Psalms and Proverbs and even of Job, and it kind of says, okay, but now what? So you've been taught how to be wise. You know how everything should work. But what is it really all about? What does it really mean to be wise in a world that so often seems to walk away from wisdom? And in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, we have this beautiful poem that talks about the importance of contentment in seasons. So read with me, if you will, in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, starting in verse 1. The writer says, "There is an appointed time for everything, and there is a time for every event under heaven. A time to give birth and a time to die. A time to plant and a time to uproot what is planted, a time to kill and a time to heal, a time to tear down and a time to build up, a time to weep and a time to laugh, a time to mourn and a time to dance, a time to throw stones and a time to gather stones, a time to embrace and a time to shun embracing, a time to search and a time to give up as lost, a time to keep and a time to throw away, a time to tear apart and a time to sew together, a time to be silent, and a time to speak, a time to love, and a time to hate, a time for war, and a time for peace. What I want to talk about this morning is that the root message of this psalm, we're going to get into the second half of this poem in a little bit. But the importance of this idea is that there is many, many different seasons in our life. We often use that analogy of time, that we even talk about it in terms of our age. Someone might say that this person is in the spring of their life. They're in their youth, they're growing, they're maturing. We use the same idea with somebody who might be in the winter of their life. They might be towards the end of their life. And I think a lot of times we almost spend time wondering, you know, what season of my life is it? And we spend a lot of time thinking about our age. And one of the most profound things that was ever talked to me about the idea of seasons was actually a quote that my grandfather said one time. It's actually recorded in the outline. It says that life is not about the season we are in, but what we do with our seasons. I think the first lesson in contentment is recognizing that the seasons are not in our control. The time we find ourselves in is not in our control. And how much of our life do we spend trying to grasp this concept? How much of our life do we spend trying to control the uncontrollable? Trying to halt the effects of aging? Trying to hold on to the time that we have and recognizing that it slips through our fingers? I think what the Bible would profess as the beginning of wisdom is recognizing that it is not you who are in control of your seasons, but it is God that is in control of the flow of time. Turn over, if you will, to Isaiah chapter 55, where I think one of the best expressions that explains this concept of God being the one in control of our life. Isaiah 55, and in verse 8, the prophet records the Lord saying that my thoughts are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. I think a lot of times we try to grasp onto God's role. We try to take control of our life. We try so hard to have every little bit of our life planned out, and we set all these goals for ourselves, and we say, if I can get to this position at this age with this amount of income, I can really be in a good position. I can then start to work towards this goal. I can reach this retirement income. I can reach these things. We'll be able to move here. And all these things, if they just fall into sequence, I'll be able to really get a good hold on what we're doing. And yet, how often do we find that these plans almost never come to fruition? One of the things that I have consistently found in my life is that it tends to be towards this time of the year. I kind of reflect and I say, a year ago, did I think I would be where I am right now? I can confidently say that even at the young age of 27, every single year I have done that exercise, I have been somewhere completely different than I thought I would be. Most of the time, physically, I've been in a different place than I thought I'd be. Sorry we've moved so much, Rachel. But even in our profession, even in what we've been doing, even in the kids that we've had and the differences in our family, every year has brought such unexpected change, has brought such unexpected challenges. A year ago, if you had told me I was going to be preaching in Texas, I would have been very flabbergasted. We were in the middle of Florida. I was working very hard on a construction project. We had very clear goals that we were going to be there 3 to 5 years and then maybe go do X, Y, and Z. And thank God, none of that came true. God had a much better plan in store for us. But that's what's so important to understand in this time, that we can plan these things out. We can try to put all these things into fruition. But it's important for us to recognize, as James has talked about, as we've looked at our adult Bible class on Wednesday, that there's a reason we say, if the Lord wills. Because ultimately, the very first key to contentment is recognizing that it's about God's will in our life and not ours. And that the thing that we conform our life around, the thing that we plan around, is trying to attain God's will rather than our own. And recognizing that the way He may get us there, a lot of times is not going to be the way that we might expect. What we think may be the best outcome for ourselves and for our family may not be what we think it needs to be. Proverbs 27 and verse 1 discusses this concept and discusses the difficulty that we have in making these plans. Proverbs 27 and verse 1 says, "Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth." We live in such a culture that I think is really obsessed with this idea. How often do you see people advertising, you know, you need to have a 5 and a 10 and a 15 year plan. You need to make sure you've got these ducks in a row and you want to make sure you're prepared for all these things. And don't misunderstand me. It's not a bad thing to plan. That's not what I'm trying to say here. We should be trying to plan for the future. We should be looking for what we can be doing. But it's when we become obsessed with those plans. It's when these attempts at controlling our life become central to our happiness and become central to our concept of joy that we're setting ourselves up for failure. When we have set these concrete business and personal and financial goals for ourselves and we've hinged our life upon those plans, when they inevitably don't materialize like we think they are, well, then we've set ourselves up for failure. And instead, what the Bible would encourage you to do is set your foundation on God and on His will. Don't put it on your own plans. Don't put it on the plans of someone who can't even see what tomorrow holds. Put your trust in God who is and who will be. That is the key to this idea of contentment, is understanding that God is in control. And in fact, the author of Ecclesiastes even gets to this point at the very end of his book. In Ecclesiastes chapter 12 and verse 13 and 14, probably the most famous verses of the entire book, the author says the conclusion, when all has been heard, is fear God and keep His commandments, because this applies to every person. So the author of Ecclesiastes, one of the authors of the wisdom literature, would tell you that in light of all these things, in light of the numerous seasons you will find yourself in, the conclusion is fear God and keep His commandments. That needs to be the central focus of your life. And so if we're looking for wisdom, if we're looking for this magic secret to contentment, it's not going to be found in the ways that the world... How many books have you seen written about chicken soup for the teenage soul, and chicken soup for the married soul, and chicken soup for every different type of soul in the whole world? Whoever wrote that first book must be just rolling in the money, because they have written a chicken soup for every single soul. You want to know the reason they've been able to do that? Is because there is no chicken soup. It doesn't work like that. The secret to contentment, the secret to joy, is recognizing what it's all about in this life. And that recognition is that God has to be at the center of your life, or there is no point. There is no long-lasting legacy. There is no endurance if you have not centered your life and centered your plans around God and His will for you. Conclusion, when all is heard, is fear God and keep His commandments. So that has to be the first thing that we recognize, is that we are not in control of our own seasons. We are not the captain of the ship. We have to recognize the importance of God in our life and recognize that our life must be patterned after His will. And then there's a natural thing that follows after that, beyond just the intellectual recognition that God is the one in charge. It means changing your life and changing your plans and changing your behavior so that you are reliant upon God, that you are depending upon God for what you need. Peter says in 1 Peter 5 and verse 6 through 7, "Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you at the proper time, casting all your anxiety on Him, because He cares for you." This is what Peter would say is the key to finding success, the key to finding contentment in your seasons, is to humble yourself. To be willing not just to recognize that God is in control, but to live your life in a way that reflects that God is in control. To pattern your behavior after God being in charge of your life. To conform your plans, to conform your life trajectory, and to conform your hopes for the future around God's will for you. We've talked about this again in the James class of how important it is for when we make plans for the future, not just to say, and you know, I kind of hope that God lets us do this, but saying if the Lord wills it means that if the Lord doesn't will it, then we don't want that to happen. We want the Lord's will to be accomplished in our life. And that's going to be the goal of our life and our family and our work and every day of our life, is centered around achieving God's will. Now this requires us to know God's will. This requires us to be educated in God's word. It requires us to be in communication with God. Because if you don't know God, you're not going to know His will for you. In fact, this was one of the issues that the Corinthians had. And if you turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 12, Paul tries to encourage these brethren of the importance of recognizing God's will and the importance of accepting God's will in our life. And the way that he does this is by giving an example from his own life where Paul had to change something. He had to modify his expectations to fit the will of God. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 12 and verse 7, "Because of the surpassing greatness of the revelations, for this reason, to keep me from exalting myself, there was given me a thorn in the flesh, a messenger of Satan to torment me, to keep me from exalting myself. Concerning this, I implored the Lord three times that it might leave me. And he has said to me, 'My grace is sufficient for you, for power is perfected in weakness.' Most gladly, therefore, I will rather boast about my weaknesses so that the power of Christ may dwell in me. Therefore, I am well content with weaknesses, with insults, with distresses, with persecutions, with difficulties for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then I am strong." Paul did not anticipate whatever this thorn in the flesh, if it was a physical ailment or whatever it may have been, he did not calculate this into his trajectory. He did not anticipate this being a part of his life going forward. And he asked God, I would really prefer if we didn't have this. I would really like if I didn't have to deal with this issue. He asked three separate times. God says, no. This is my will for you. My will and your will are different. Paul, what are you going to do to respond to it? And Paul demonstrates the correct response is, okay, I'm going to change my expectations then. I will be content with this outcome because I understand that my God is perfected in my weakness. That my God is going to be able to shine through my infirmity. That's the attitude that we have to have. Is that our plans may need to change and almost assuredly do need to change if we've never undergone this exercise. Our plans may need to change to fit God's will into our life. It doesn't go the other way around. We don't say, all right, we're going to do X, Y, and Z, and we're going to have this 5-year plan and 10-year plan and 15-year plan, and we're going to try to kind of cram God into that wherever we can find him. We'll try to squeeze God in a couple of times. It's never going to work. That's never going to be the way that you find contentment. Because the key is contentment is found in God's will and not in ours. The Hebrew author expands upon this idea in Hebrews 12 and verse 1. He says, "Therefore, since we have so great a cloud of witnesses surrounding us, let us also lay aside every encumbrance and the sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and has sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." Hebrew author says the only way you're going to endure this race, the only way you're going to be able to get through these difficult seasons, these tribulations, these frustrating times, is if you have fixed your eye on Jesus. You ever seen a runner, an Olympic level sprinter, start the race and then he just starts running like this? You ever seen him do that? He's like, well, I got to make sure I don't trip. What is he going to do? He hasn't fixed his eyes on the finish line. He has not set his eyes for the end goal. And in so being concentrated on what he's doing with his feet, everyone else has blown past him. He's going to be in last place. He may not even reach the finish line before the time is up. That's the kind of metaphor that Paul's using, or the Hebrew author is using here. It's that you have to fix your eyes on the end goal. You have to always keep that end objective in your mind. Fixing your eyes on Jesus. So that means that Jesus has to be the end goal. That has to be what we've calculated our life trajectory to be. Whatever the plans are that we're trying to make, if the end goal is not Jesus, you've missed it. You've completely missed it. Your life has to be patterned after the idea that I am going to see the risen Savior. That's going to be my end goal. Whatever happens here in the middle, whatever path I have to take, whatever changes I have to make to the course, I've got to get to that end. If I run the prettiest race and I go off course, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter how fast I did it. Doesn't matter how successful I did it. No matter how many beautiful landmarks I passed. If I miss the end goal, I've missed the point. So when we're looking at our plans, when we're looking at how we're going through these seasons, have we fixed our eyes on Jesus? Have we made our plans with the end goal in mind? So this is the most important part of this, is understanding that God controls our seasons, that God is the one charting our course. So the question for us is, are we going to rely on God's will? Are we going to let God direct us where He wants us to go? Or are we going to fight against that and try to chart our own course? The reality is that if we're hard fighting against God, that's where all of this difficulty comes from. That's where that anguish and that frustration and that inner torment comes from, because you're fighting against your nature. You're fighting against what God has set within you, because God has made you to seek after Him. God has created you to long for Him. And so when you see a world that is so depressed, that is so frustrated, that is so unbelievably sorrowful, it's because they're fighting against what God set within them. God wants man to seek after Him. And He's given us this spark, this conscience, this awareness that there's something more than this. There's something more than this life around us. And that, in my deepest heart of hearts, is what I want to do. And yet so many people, unfortunately, have decided I'm going to go a different way. I'm not going to follow that spirit that God has set within me. I'm not going to follow that conscience. I'm going to go my own way. And so the key for us is, if we recognize that God is the one in control, if we recognize that God has a path for us, well, then we've got to walk it. We have to listen to what God has expected for us. If you turn back to Ecclesiastes chapter 3, we're going to read the second half of that section. And after citing this beautiful poetry of how there are so many different seasons and times for everything, the author says, "What profit is there to the worker from that in which he toils? I have seen the task which God has given the sons of men with which to occupy themselves. He has made everything appropriate in its time. He has also set eternity in their heart. Yet so that man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. I know that there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and to do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, that every man who eats and drinks sees good in all his labor. It is the gift of God." The author of Ecclesiastes says He has set eternity in their heart. He has consciously given them a recognition that this life is not all that there is. But He has also said, go and enjoy this life. Appreciate the gift that this life is. We've talked about this before, that sometimes I think we can get trapped in the idea that this life is a punishment. That this life is some sort of horrible thing, and we just have to endure all this horribleness so that we can get to the end. And there's an aspect of that. But this life is difficult. There are disappointments and there are frustrations in this life. And there are many people around the world that have a much more hard life than we do. But no matter how difficult the life is, no matter how horrible this life is, God has given us blessings in this world. He has given us His Spirit. He has given us joy. He has given us the ability to go do what we were made to do. To go and do work. And what the New Testament reveals is that the most important work is not the physical work we're doing with our hands, but the spiritual work. The act of good service. The acts of the fruit of the Spirit. And that, no matter what your physical condition, no matter if you can't do much physical work, we can all be doing that spiritual work that God has called for us. We can all be content in the labors that God has set forth for us. The labor of building good relationships. The labor of preaching the good gospel of Jesus Christ. The labor of growing in the image of God. That labor has been set before all of us, and God says it is a gift to work hard in that labor, to see the good fruits of your hard work. That is the gift that God has given us. And that, I believe, is the key to contentment is recognizing the good fruit that God has instructed us to sow, the good things that God wishes for us to do. And the most important part of this good work is found in John 14 and verse 1. And it actually goes well with one of the songs we sang earlier today. Jesus tells his disciples, "Do not let your heart be troubled. Believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you, for I go to prepare a place for you. If I go and prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. And you know the way where I am going." Thomas said to him, "Lord, we do not know where you are going. How do we know the way?" Jesus said to him, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me." We've been given the opportunity to do such good labor and work here. And we can labor and work hard knowing that there is an end to this particular labor coming. Knowing that there is an end to this time that we are in. But there is coming a time where the labor we do will not be marred by disappointment. It will not be shadowed by the brokenness of this world. It will not be tainted by the horribleness of sin. There's coming a day where the labor we are doing now will prepare us for the good work that we will do in the kingdom of God. The good work of praising Him, of sowing the life incorruptible, of being in God's presence and no longer having to have faith, but just the whole pure, wonderful sight of Him with us. That is the beauty of this life, is that it's going to end. We talked about this in the first sermon, that long suffering is not just you're suffering through this and you just have to endure it. The long suffering of God is also that His promises will be fulfilled. And that is how we can have contentment in this life, is that we can take joy in the course that God has set for us. We can take joy knowing that we have placed our trust in God, that we have trusted in the path that He has set us on, and knowing that there is good things to be done on this earth. There is good, wonderful labor to be done while we are here. But we can also take great contentment in knowing that there is an end to this place. That at the end of this race, there will be Jesus. There will be God. There will be the Spirit. And we will see with eyes unhindered. We will be in the presence of God. There will be no more sorrow. There will be no more dismay. And so that's how we find contentment here on earth. It's not through some magic formula. It's not through some self-help book. It's not through philosophy or science or any other worldly thing. It's through the knowledge that God is in control of our seasons, that He is a good and faithful God, and that He will direct us in the path that we must follow, and that if we rely upon Him, and if we trust in the path that He has crossed for us, then there will be good labor for us to do. There will be joy and contentment in this life. And most importantly, there will be great joy and great contentment in the life to come. So my prayer for us today is that we recognize the need for God's will. That we recognize that He has set a path for us that begins and ends with Jesus. The path is dictated on following in His footsteps. And so the question for us today is, have we done so? Have we placed our trust in Jesus, and have we depended upon Him for our life? If the answer to that is no, either because you have not been baptized and submitted your life to God, or because you have failed to walk in His name despite taking it on, we would want to help you today. We would like to walk with you. We would like to walk together towards that wonderful finish line of Jesus Christ. And if there's anything here at West Oaks that we can do, let's do so now while we stand and while we sing.